Hello, and welcome back to the Las Vegas Sun podcast on everything fighting Fightcasters. I am Brett Okamoto, the Las Vegas Sun's boxing and UFC, Strikeforce, WEC, all that MMA stuff writer. Just got back 2 days ago from Memphis, Tennessee, saw a great card in UFC 107. Joined today by someone who was not there but was at the UNLV basketball game. If you'd like to hear more about that, make sure you check out the Rebels Room podcast. But not talking about the Rebels today, talking about UFC 107, Ryan Green. How you doing, Ryan?
Good. Did you get some Memphis barbecue out of that deal, I hope?
I definitely got my fill of Memphis barbecue. Nice. Maybe even good for life. If you go to Memphis, just expect to eat a ton of barbecue. I don't think they believe in any other condiment, but I'm not complaining. It was good stuff.
No, there's no way you can.
Well, UFC 107, great card. One of those cards where you're like, man, I wish people... If you're going to go out and buy a UFC DVD, buy 107. The prelims were great. The main event was great. Co-main event was great. I mean, this was just top to bottom one of the best cards of the entire year, in my opinion.
And, just imagine how great it would have been if Rampage and Rashad fought, too.
You know what, though? It's like these guys...
It could have been a mega event.
It could have been a mega event, but you know what? Everybody stepped up, and you can't ask for a better card. It was almost like you kind of forgot. I mean...
So it was better than 106 is what you were saying.
It was better than 106, and the atmosphere was great. You know, when the UFC goes to new cities, first time in Memphis, the atmosphere is great. The FedEx Forum was filled during the prelims. Mm-hmm. I mean, you just don't see that in Vegas anymore. You see empty seats in the prelims. The televised card, by that time, hopefully you're going to have a full house in Vegas. But when they go to these new cities, Memphis, I'm telling you, FedEx Forum, I looked around during the second, third fight of the night, and it was full. It was a great, great atmosphere for a great card.
Really quick, do you think that some of that comes from complacency in Vegas, in fight fans in Vegas, knowing that they're going to get probably three or four shots a year to go see the UFC live, so maybe there's not the urgency to go and spend the money to go sit there?
Probably.
And on the flip side, do you think that, or I guess expanding on that, do you think that maybe might compel Dana White to have fewer cards in Las Vegas, you know, with the way things are going, seeing that everywhere he goes, people are intrigued, where in Vegas it's kind of become taboo?
I would say no, just because if you look at their upcoming schedule, 108 is in Vegas, 109 is in Vegas, so you've got back-to-back two UFC events within a month of each other in Las Vegas. Plus, it's easy. You know, the UFC's offices are right here. The fighters enjoy coming to Vegas. A lot of the fighters live here in Vegas. So I don't see Vegas losing any fights. But, you know, if you live in Las Vegas, you're listening to this podcast, you get tickets for one, go check out the prelims, man. I mean, if you're spending money on that stuff, go check out the prelims.
Get your money's worth.
I mean, the prelims in UFC 107 were tremendous. You know, I mean, and actually... submission of the night, fight of the night, knockout of the night, all came from the prelims, not the main card. So, you know, if that says anything, you know, get to the event early, watch these fights. That said, my favorite fight of the night was BJ Penn, Diego Sanchez, you know, contradicting what I just said. But, that was just a great fight. Anybody who saw it, if you haven't seen it, I'm sure you've read about it. I'm sure you've seen pictures of Diego Sanchez's face afterwards. He was pretty busted up. BJ Penn just showing how dominating he is. Sanchez came in looking to do different things, wanted to try and strike with him a little bit, and then it was pretty clear that he was losing the stand-up battle. He wanted to take it to the ground and was just like Kenny Florian in 101, could not take BJ Penn to the ground. What did you think of the fight, Ryan?
Seems like he's getting to his prime here, a late prime. You know, I know he had one already, but it seems like he's getting to the point where he's on a plateau where nobody's going to – at least it looks like nobody can reach him because, you know, like you said, I mean, shoot, he just annihilated Diego. And I think we both probably thought that Diego would stand a little bit of a better chance, not saying he'd win. But now here's my question to you because you're the expert here. After – I mean, Diego was you really can't argue. He was the worthy opponent, right? He was the worthy challenger. Who in that division – has a realistic shot? I mean, who's going to really push BJ Penn?
Well, right now, that is the question. And you got to look at BJ Penn and see, well, what area can maybe a guy get under his skin, you know? And, I mean, and this is all setting aside the lucky one punch, because in any UFC fight, that's possible, the one lucky punch. But I'm talking about just a legitimate, this is an area where I can beat BJ Penn going in there. There's not much. I mean, his stand-up is amazing. His takedown defense is amazing. You know, we all saw how George St. Pierre was able to take him down in their fight. George St. Pierre is a 170-pound fighter. BJ Penn is a 155-pound fighter. And when you look, when you're looking up and down the 155-pound division, really the only two guys who are left at this point to maybe take a shot at Penn's belt is Frankie Edgar or Gray Maynard. And
but does that really excite a lot of people?
No, it doesn't excite a lot of people. And I don't, I really wouldn't give too big of a chance to either one of those guys. If you go, if you're gonna say, you know, which would be the more exciting fight, I think it would have to be Maynard, just because Maynard's takedowns are probably a little bit better than pretty much anybody in the 155 pound division that, that Penn has faced. I mean, Sanchez has good takedowns, but Maynard is the real strong collegiate wrestler type that, you know, Penn likes to back up to the cage. You know, he doesn't just sprawl on guys who are shooting on him. He backs up. He uses the cage very effectively to keep his balance. Maynard is the one guy who's got the strength and the wrestling ability, you know, where he's the kind of guy that he'll lift you up over his shoulder, walk you to the center of the octagon so you can't use the fence anymore, and slam you, you know, and so that's something that, that maybe would work. And then once you get pinned to the ground, you got to worry about his Brazilian jiu-jitsu. You have to worry about his ability to get back to his feet. I mean, it would be a long shot for Gray Maynard to beat BJ Penn, but I'm thinking about the rest of the guys in the division. I don't think Frankie Edgar's got it.
Does he fight GSP again? Does he want that challenge? That's what he wants.
Yeah. And it's just a question of how soon he goes back up to the 170-pound division. After the last GSP fight in January, BJ Penn went out. He got a new trainer, Marv Marinovic, who's got his whole backstory that we won't get into. But no matter what you think of the guy or not, I think BJ Penn is proof that he's a phenomenal trainer. Penn has looked.
I don't think anything bad about him. I think bad about his son, who's a loon.
Like I said, long story with Marinovic. If you don't know that, you know, take an hour to go.
Just Google Todd Marinovic,
and you'll spend an hour reading his story. But Marinovic is a great trainer. He's got BJ Penn looking, like you said, in his prime. You know, at 31 years old, BJ Penn right now probably is the best BJ Penn we've ever seen.
Most professional athletes, and I know UFC's a little different because the shelf life kind of reflects almost that of like an NFL player. Mm-hmm. You know, but you know, the prime for most professional athletes comes between age 26 to about 32, somewhere in there, and you're going to get about a 3-year stretch. And he appears to be right at the beginning of it. It seems like he's probably going to have about a year or two of dominance ahead.
Well, and what's been interesting is that, you know, after the GSP fight, people said, well, Penn is past his prime. And now all of a sudden he's reached this level that it didn't. I mean, he just completely dominated Kenny Florian and Diego Sanchez. I mean, that is not easy to do, you know. I mean, we saw what Kenny Florian did to Clay Guida, you know, just this weekend at 107.
And nice win for Kenny, too.
Great win for Kenny. And it came after, you know, a situation where people were like, well, maybe Kenny wasn't as good as we thought he was. Maybe he's a little overrated.
Just can't beat Ben. No shame in that.
Yeah.
He's not the only guy.
And it's brought up an interesting question. It was a poll that I put out to our readers. Who is the most dominant champion in his division in the UFC right now? And it's quite a list to pick from. You got BJ Penn, GSP at 170, Anderson Silva at 185, Lyoto Machida at 205, and then Brock Lesnar with the heavyweights. And
how many times did you vote for Machida?
You know what?
You can't fix these.
I got to tell you, right now, Machida is at the bottom with 2%. Yeah. That must be because of the Shogun fight, because, you know, people must be down on Machida right now as a champion. Anderson Silva, who you might think would be the favorite, you know what? But I don't know, because I thought about this and I was like, well, Anderson Silva's got to be the favorite right now. He's at the top of a lot of people's pound for pound list, you know. But then you got GSP, who's just annihilated people, you know, defending his belt. And the same with BJ Penn. Right now, Penn leads, you know, and maybe it's just because he just fought, but at 34%, and Silva and St. Pierre are neck and neck at 25% and 28%. How would you answer that question? Who do you think is the most dominant champ in his division?
Well, I think you got to vote based on what's fresh in your mind, because you mentioned Machida being at the bottom. Well, I mean, people wouldn't have said that same thing, you know,
right, after he beat Rashad.
Even a week before the Shogun fight. I mean, I think right now you'd have to vote for Penn just because that's what's fresh in your mind. And I think also you got to factor in, all right, Anderson Silva just had elbow surgery, so you don't know how that's going to affect him. Brock Lesnar, obviously all the physical issues he's going with. You don't know how that's going to affect him right now as it stands. And GSP just coming off an injury. As it stands, BJ Penn is healthy, and BJ Penn is dominating. And right now, when you factor those two things in, I think he's the only guy you really can vote for if you're using your head.
Yeah, and you know, it comes down to how many times you defended it, and Penn has now defended it 3 times.
It isn't easy to do.
No, it's not easy to do. And
few people do that.
St. Pierre has also defended it 3 times, and you look at the quality of competition as well, you know. I mean, my first reaction was GSP or BJ Penn, because I don't think the 185-pound division gives as many challenges to Anderson Silva, and I think that's why he's moved up to 205. You know, Nate Marquardt is a great fighter, Rich Franklin, great fighter, but you don't think of a really, when you're listing off the strongest divisions right now in the UFC, the 185 is probably towards the bottom, so I think that factors into how dominant, you know, is a champion.
However, love to see Silva fight Anthony Johnson at some point. See Anthony move up a little bit.
Yeah, and that's possible. But
instead
Anthony
killing himself to get down.
Yeah, but you know what? He said that he wants to stick there, and so now you got to think that he'd be an interesting fight for GSP. But like I said, you know, Anthony Johnson, he's a 170 pounder. I mean, that's the 185 is probably the weakest division, I would say, at this point. And you look at guys that BJ Penn has defended against now, Kenny Florian, Diego Sanchez, dominantly, you know. And so right now I would say that at 155, BJ Penn is pretty much unbeatable, and he's the most dominant champ. And I think that it's possible, you know, Gray Maynard, he fights Nick Diaz in January. He wins that fight, he'll probably get the next shot. If BJ beats him, I don't know if he sticks around to fight Frankie Edgar, even if Edgar gets another win. I think that Penn goes up to 170 and starts putting GSP back in his sights.
No reason to stay at 155. Fight it one more time.
So definitely keep an eye on Penn. He's not only an entertaining fighter to watch, but you know, what is this guy capable of? And if he moves up to 170 and he starts taking out guys there, if he gets that second fight, that third fight, excuse me, with GSP, you know, right after the second one when he was just annihilated and his corner had to throw in the towel, it was that bad. People, you know, if you would have asked me, are we going to see a third fight of that? No, no one's interested in that. But I think people have bought into this is a new BJ Penn now. This is a BJ Penn that we've never seen before. He's taking it seriously. Maybe that loss really woke him up. And, you know, if he makes his way through the 170 division and he gets to fight St. Pierre for a third time, a lot of people will be interested in that fight.
Well, now transitioning with that, you mentioned how the loss to GSP woke BJ Penn up. Obviously, a loss to Brock Lesnar woke Frank Mir up. And he wants his third shot at Frank, or at Brock. Might be a while till he gets it, just given everything that's going in. I mean, he's still got to fight Carwin first, and they're still waiting to see if Brock's going to fight again. But do you kind of see a similarity in those two situations where that early 30s wake-up call?
Yeah, I definitely do. I don't think that Frank was necessarily coasting on his talent, as Dana White said that BJ had. I think that Frank has always taken it seriously, but I think that right now he has one fighter in mind, and you see that when he added 20 pounds. And he wants to get up to Brock Lesnar's size, where he's actually cutting weight before a fight. And that shows that he's got one idea in mind, and that is to get myself ready as much as I can for Brock Lesnar. And the heavyweight division is real interesting right now. You've got basically four guys, you know, competing for what could end up being a shot at Lesnar, or it could be an interim title until Lesnar gets healthy. We won't know for another month and a half, whether Lesnar requires major surgery. If he requires major surgery, you know, who knows, he'll be out up to a year, up to forever, you know, hopefully not. But in the meantime, you know, we got to figure this out. And Shane Carwin, it was clearly at the top of the list. As of right now, he's still at the top of the list. If Brock, you know, finds out a month from now that, no, you don't need major surgery, you know, he can get back in the gym and start working, Carwin could still get the first shot. But it just kind of depends. And if it comes out that it's going to take a while for Brock to get back, I think we're going to see Frank Mir face Shane Carwin, especially now that we found out Antonio Nogueira is fighting Cain Velasquez at 110. So that's
almost looking at a couple semifinals there, maybe.
Yeah, it's kind of a four-man tournament. And it's one of those situations where they don't know what they're fighting for yet, whether it's an interim title or a shot at Brock. But, yeah, Frank talked a little bit before the Czech Congo fight, saying that Czech had the worst ground game in the UFC, saying that he couldn't afford to do anything but completely obliterate him, because even a lackluster win, even if he were to beat him, but, you know, not in a way that was a, like a highlight reel finish, wouldn't help him, because that's how much he looked down on Czech Congo. He's like, this is a guy that I need to walk right through to elevate my status, which is exactly what he did. Came out with that, I mean, what an overhand left that was. And he almost, it was funny because it was such an awkward delivery, because he was leaning way down, which is what got Congo to kind of bring his arms down to protect his body. But then all of a sudden that shot came so high and landed right flush on Congo's jaw. I mean, that was a great, great, you know, striking, impressive, you know, showing by Frank as far as a striking game. And then, you know, once Congo was in trouble, he went into survival mode, tried to grab Frank's leg. You can't do that against a guy with the jiu-jitsu skills that Frank has. And yeah, so Frank showed that he's hungry. He's very talented. I think he solidified his spot as the number three heavyweight in the world. You know, you put Fedor up there, you put Brock up there, and then, you know, right now you put him. I mean,
put him ahead of Carwin?
I think so, because we're still, you know, Carwin needs to fight some bigger name guys.
Like a Frank Mir.
And I think that would be a great fight. I think Carwin and Frank are right with each other. And it's interesting because, you know, we just talked about the poll that we put up with the BJ Penn story. Another poll we put up was, who would you be most interested in seeing fight Brock first? And I got to be honest, I thought people were going to say Shane Carwin immediately. We've seen Frank fight him twice now. You know, Shane is a big guy. He rivals Brock in size. He's got knockout power. So I was thinking that people would say, we want to see Carwin fight him before we see a third meeting with Frank. Right now, 62% of the poll says Frank Mir. And maybe it's because we're a Las Vegas city and he's from Las Vegas. He's a Las Vegas guy, went to Bonanza High School.
And another thing, it's fresh in people's minds. People remember seeing, you know, Frank just annihilate Czech Congo this weekend. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people can't even remember the last time Shane Carwin fought. It's been a little while.
Yeah, but
I think that does factor into some people's decisions. And has Shane earned that shot? Yes.
Yeah, and there's a personal tinge to that fight, obviously. Mm-hmm. The way that's
the storyline, the sexy storyline,
the way that Brock acted after defeating Frank at UFC 100, and Shane Carwin is a little bit of a quieter fighter. He's not gonna ruffle anybody's feathers too much, but you know, it's just a weird situation, because it's like, what are we even talking about? Because we don't know when Brock is coming back. But in the meantime, even without Brock, heavyweight division is going to be fun to see how it pans out. As I said, with the Nogueira fight and the Cain Velasquez fight happening at 110. And then we'll see what happens with Mir and Carwin. I would think that Mir-Carwin fight could be, you know, the next obvious choice here in the near future. And other than that, you know, Kenny Florian, as we said, really great win against Clay Guida. I thought that Clay Guida had actually worked with Greg Jackson down in Albuquerque before this fight. I thought that maybe, you know, given Guida's kind of aggressive, all over the place style, and then with Jackson's kind of tactical help with it, that might be an upset. You know, I thought that could have been an upset fight, but Florian looked great. John Fitch goes out and does his thing, beats Mike Pierce. You know, a fight where people were booing a lot. That's just how John Fitch is, though. He's going to control you. He's going to look a little bit better than you, but not. Finish you off, you know. And so when you're watching a John Fitch fight, that's just what you got to expect. The guy is 24-3. He doesn't lose, but he doesn't win. You know, in a way that's going to be up on the highlight reel anytime soon. But you know, good performance by Fitch. And then man, I thought was the fight of the night. It was Paul Buentello, Stefan Struve. These guys at one point just stood with Buentello's back against the fence and just throwing, you know, for a good 10 seconds straight. And then Struve backs off, puts up his glove, you know, to tap him to show that, wow, we're really going at it, you know, keep bringing it. And the crowd loved that fight. I really thought that was going to get fight of the night, but Dana White decides to go with Alan Belcher and Wilson Gouveia, which was also a great fight. Something similar happened. They both just stood there and swung at each other, and I think Belcher is a little stronger, and his shots hurt just a little bit more. So Gouveia goes down. But, man, just like I said, great card. And now, you know, you look forward to January 2nd, I guess, Rashad Evans, Thiago Silva. Not as much hype for the card as far as top to bottom. I think that people are excited about the Rashad Evans, mm-hmm. Thiago Silva fight. I mean, obviously people wanted to see Rashad face Rampage, but now supposedly that fight is back on the table if Rashad beats Silva. So it'll be a very pro Rashad following that fight. And you know, other than that, some interesting fights on that card, but we'll see how it shakes up. Everything's not official yet, but I think it's a good main event. You know, it's not Anderson Silva, Vitor Belfort that people would have wanted to see, but that's how it is, man, right now in the UFC, people going down. So I think that's all we got for you. Check back next week. We'll be talking hopefully more about Manny Pacquiao, Floyd Mayweather Jr. Still not sure where that fight's going to happen, but at this point I would say that MGM is a clear favorite. I'm sure that everybody's happy to hear that. It looks like this fight is going to happen in Las Vegas. You know, Dallas is still out there. New Orleans is still out there, but I'm expecting that it happens at MGM. So hopefully we'll be talking about that next week, and we'll get you caught up on the WEC fight that happens this weekend, and also Strike Forces this weekend, and also Kelly Pavlik fights this weekend. So big weekend for fighting, and we'll catch you up on all of it next week.